Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms both in the system and within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and my guest today is Sharif Abdullah. Sharif and I have been trying to do an interview for a while. He lives in Portland, Oregon, and I live here in Berkeley right now. We're in San Francisco at an interesting conference called Planet Work. Anyway, Sharif has written a book called Creating a World That Works for All. He's also written other books and has an institute called Common Way and a new project called Common Society, and has been working in Sri Lanka for the last few years. And you're going to have to tell me the name of your last book, Sharif.
Okay. It's called The Power of One, Authentic Leadership in Turbulent Times.
I actually read it, sorry. I just don't have any papers in front of me. I wonder if you just comment for real quick on this conference that we are, since I just mentioned it, Planet Work, because it was from you, even though it's in the area where I live, it was from you that I found out that it was even happening, and it is very interesting.
Yeah, Planet Work's a very interesting conference. It's networking a sustainable world, and it's looking at the highest end of our high technology to actually start building the fabric of a global society, of a sustainable global society. All the high-techy people are here, and also a lot of the community people and the sustainability advocates, and it promises to be an interesting few days. I'm making a presentation on Saturday on virtual and real communities, how to bridge the gap between the world of the Internet and the world that people really are experiencing.
Oh, that's I hope we get to talk some about that on this conversation today. First, I'd like to hear a little bit about what you've been doing in Sri Lanka, and I want to let people know that what I know as your claim to fame anyway, that I've been very impressed with, is your ability to bring people together who ordinarily wouldn't necessarily come together and come together in agreement, and that inclusivity is very important to you. That's a good way to get social change, which I really agree with. So having said that, just tell us a little bit about what you've been doing in Sri Lanka.
Yeah, the function of Common Way is to bring people together past the barriers that separate us, the barriers of deep conflict, barriers that deal with race, ethnicity, class, gender, and the things that are the seed beds for our wars that are going on our planet right now. The work in Sri Lanka, as many people know, that Sri Lanka has been suffering with a civil slash ethnic slash religious war for about almost 20 years.
Slash class, I would say.
Yes, and it's been very difficult. It's been going on for a very long time. And what we tried to do is get in there and literally change the story, change from the war story to the peace story. And by changing the story, we believe that we could get people to stop supporting war and conflict. And I believe that we did that. The parties are now in a ceasefire that's been holding for a while, and over a year and a half as of now, and have been engaged in peace talks. And on the ground, the atmosphere is just peaceful. People are looking at using means other than violence to try to resolve their conflicts.
Mm-hmm. And you were working with the Sarvodaya Project. Maybe you'd like to say a little bit about that, please.
Right. Obviously, Common Way is a small organization and can't walk into a country and say, okay, yeah, we're going to bring peace here. Sarvodaya has been working for peace in Sri Lanka for the 18 to 20 years of the Civil War. Sarvodaya is a very large organization founded by Dr. A.T. Aryaratne. Many people refer to him as the Living Gandhi, and it's based on Gandhian and Buddhist principles. And the purpose of Sarvodaya is to bring about the reawakening of society. The word Sarvodaya actually means the awakening of all. And Dr. Ariaratne's concept is, if you're not working for the betterment of your community, you're simply asleep. So you should wake up and start working for the betterment of the community.
Well, that sounds good. And you are African American and have been in started out in New Jersey, right?
Yes.
And most recently we're in Sri Lanka with, I'm sure, a whole bunch in between. And you live in Oregon. And you're still working on, you know, on this very, very important issue. So tell us something about what's going on with whatever it is that you think is important, maybe the open, a common society movement.
Yes, I tell people I was raised in what Time magazine says is the worst city in America, Camden, New Jersey. Right now I live in what a lot of magazines say is the best city in America, which is Portland, Oregon. And in the middle, in between those two, I've been to 26 different countries. I've been to every continent except Antarctica. I tell people I go to more countries in 1 month than George Bush has ever visited in his life. And I have seen a lot of things happening in the world, and I've seen the things that have been tearing the fabric of the human community apart. And we started the Common Society Movement a little while ago. And the purpose of the Common Society Movement is, now that we have the technology to actually bring all of humanity together, ask and answer the question, what is the vision for human beings on this planet at the turn of the 21st century? 50 years ago, we didn't have the technology to begin answering that question. We didn't have the technology that would allow us to be in contact with every continent on this planet. But I can reach into my pocket, pull out my cell phone, and dial some combination of digits to reach virtually every city on this planet, to reach virtually every community, every culture on this planet. Now that we can do that, let's do it. Let's actually do this. Let's use this amazing technology to ask ourselves a question. And the question is very simple. Where are human beings going now? So this becomes not a movement of Americans, and it becomes not a movement of the wealthy. It becomes a movement for all of us.
Yeah, because one way we could be going is extinct.
One of the visions for humanity in the 21st century is that we're not here on this planet. Another vision of humanity at the turn of the 21st century is that the world will work for a very privileged few, and then the rest of the people of the world will be suffering. Those are not visions that are crafted by the people of the world. It's crafted by various special, vested, small interests. So the purpose of the Common Society Movement is to engage a massive number of people, tens of millions of people around the planet, and engage all of us in this conversation, as opposed to waiting for vested interests to come up with answers to these questions. Because we're pretty much guaranteed that we're not going to like their answers. Mm-hmm. I want to get us out of the mode of we're going to protest this answer or protest that answer. What we need to become is proactive and start saying we are the ones that can envision and can stimulate the visions for hundreds of thousands, for millions, for tens of millions, and ultimately for billions of human beings on the planet.
So, Sharif Abdullah, what do you say to do about that? I hear a lot of people say that, and I do a lot of protesting. I also, whenever I think about it, try to think of, you know, the concrete being torn up and flowers and vegetables all growing there and cars that don't, or little vehicles that don't hurt the environment. I mean, I try to do that kind of picturing of things, and I don't know how many other people do that, but and certainly there's more to it than that. So what do you say?
The thing that we're working on is not for the Common Society Movement, those of us who are organizing it. We have about 250 organizers now in about 30 different states in this country, in a number of other countries in the world. Some are in Germany, some are in England, some are in Australia, some are in India. We actually have a couple in China, which is kind of scary because the Chinese government does not like new ideas. But what we're focusing on right now is not just what our ideas are. What we're focusing on is what are the common ideas that are welling up from people, not corporations, not governments, etc., not a group of elites that sit around a room and say, oh, we're going to decide on what the world looks like. So we have a process where we envision, over the course of many years, having facilitated dialogues with small groups of people, 50 people, 100 people, where we start to get visions or get ideas of what that future looks like. And then to start sharing those ideas. So the people who are doing this work in China will share these ideas with people in South America, and then they'll share the ideas with people in North America. And we start sharing the ideas back and forth, and what we wind up with is a really, truly coordinated whole. What we wind up with is the kind of vision that really does spark us all and that really does begin the process of working for all. I mean, the title of my book is Creating a World That Works for All. What we're doing right now, and all of us are participating in it, is creating a world that works for very, very few. What I want us to do, and I want us to do, start this process now, is to start the process of asking the question, what does it look like to live in a world that works for all beings? And not just all human beings. How does it work for all beings? And so all of this was born, crystallized in me on September 11th of 2001. As I was watching the towers coming down, I made a few predictions. One of the predictions was, Americans are going to be so angry, we will go and we are going to attack some country. Although no country was behind it, we're going to attack a country. We're going to have to put a lot of blood up on the wall because that's what it feels like to be engaged in temporary release. You want to strike and you want to hit back. And it's not going to satisfy us because temporary release never satisfies. And so we're going to have to do it again and again and again. And so at some point in time, we're going to get off of that roller coaster of either propagating war after war after war, or protesting war after war after war. We're going to leave that story, and we're going to enter a different story. And the different story is going to be, what is our vision of a society that works for all, and then how do we create that society out of what we've got right now?
Well, that's a heavy political thing because I will say, and you and I have had a lot of conversation about September 11th, and I'm actually active in trying to get out the word about U.S. complicity in September 11th. You could go to globalresearch.ca. I should give a website there, so because after putting that out there, there's many, many websites. In any case, so I think that that's exactly, you know, that those who did September 11th know exactly that. But it's, you know, it doesn't have to be a contradiction because what you're saying sounds really right. And for us to create a different kind of world while this fascism is really happening in the United States and in the world, really, because the United States is very powerful, and not only for that reason, but it's a big order, and on one hand it makes it even harder, on the other hand it makes it even more crucial. Also, the oil is running out, and resources are running out, so we're going to be, and the environment is changing, so we're going to be forced to create different kinds of things in some kind of way. We're not even going to have a choice about it, so we just hope that people think about it a little in advance. Anyway, that's me talking a lot. Back to you, Sharif Abdullah.
Well, I think that all that is true, but all of that gets us to a particular point. Whether the government knew about September 11th in advance or not, whether the government was complicit in September 11th or not. Even if September 11th never happened, we would have a mess on our hands.
Definitely.
And that mess has been in the creation for decades. And that mess has been the creation of Republican administrations and Democratic administrations. So changing the side of the coin doesn't matter. Whether it's heads or tails, mm-hmm. we still have a mess on our hands.
Well, I agree.
And what we have to do in order to we could spend all of our time, or the founders of this society could have spent all their time talking about how bad King George was, or they could have spent their time the way they spent it, in which saying, what kind of society do we want to live in? What are our key values? What are our key activities? What resources do we have available right now? Because they were saying at that time, number one, all the resources are over in England. We're just little colonies over here. And number two, how in the world can we face down the Redcoats, the most formidable fighting force the world had ever seen? When they said the Redcoats were coming, they really meant we are in deep doo-doo right now. And what they were able to do, because of the strength of the vision that they had, was to defeat that fighting machine. But we now face the world's most formidable fighting machine. So what? They can't fight on the grounds in which Conway is fighting, which is on the grounds of nonviolence. They, you know, all the king's horses, all the king's men, all the king's stealth bombers, all the king's smart bombs have no effect against an idea whose time has come. And the time has come for us to rethink our society.
Some people might get killed, but oh well. I mean, we all die anyway.
Yes, we people don't realize that, you know, you don't make an omelet without breaking the eggs, and you don't create a new society without cracking the old one. And we have to do that with a great deal of consciousness. And I am not a supporter of the people who go out and throw bricks through McDonald's windows. I'm not a supporter of McDonald's either. But I don't support that action because it's an action that's based in powerlessness and frustration, as though smashing McDonald's windows is going to produce a change in the society. What I am a supporter of is for us to think very clearly about what is the society we want to create, then go out and create it. There's no one that stops us from doing that. I had a situation when I was advising a community organization a few years ago, and they had a problem with prostitution in their community, and what their solution was that they wanted the city to block the street so that cars couldn't get down, so that the trade couldn't go on. And they've been talking to the city for 6 months, and they weren't getting anywhere, so they called me in to help them. And this is one of the days I was feeling a little tired, so I was a little shorter with them than I would normally be. And I said, why don't you just go out and block the street? And they looked at me and like, well, they, meaning the city, there's always a they won't let us. I said, of course you can. I said, you get peach baskets, you get, you know, some wood, some plywood, etc., and you go out and you block the street. Well, they will take the barriers down. I said, well, you go and you put them back. And I said, and if they take them up again, you go out there in the middle of the night with pickaxes and dig up the street. I said, who do you think the street belongs to? Now, people are getting really upset now with the new FCC rulings and giving away even more of the airwaves that we have right now. And people are getting upset with things like Clear Channel, etc. Well, who do the airwaves belong to? If I believe they belong to the FCC, I will be a petitioner and a supplicant to the FCC and will be constantly asking them for permission to do something. If I believe that they belong to the people, then I'm going to take back the airwaves. Now, when the, what I said to the, this community about the blocking the street, I said, you don't actually have to block the street. What you have to be what you have to do is be willing to block the street. Because if you're willing to do that, you will have a very different conversation with the city. The next time you if you have that conviction in yourself, the next time you sit down with the city, you will say, this street is going to be blocked. Now, the only question is whether you do it or we do it. Once they had that conviction, a month later, the city blocked the streets and they were through with their problem, moved out of their neighborhood. And so our problem is we don't have a grip on the nature of our own power. We can see the power of the other, whoever our other may be, but it's very difficult for us to see our own power and our relationship to that power. It's when we do see that power, when we do see our relationship to the power, that things actually start to change.
Yeah, it's interesting. I find people often saying, well, what shall we do? And as if, and to me it's like, but I've been an activist for 40 years and that's what I do. To me it's really obvious, but I guess it's not obvious to lots of people. And I guess that's what people, I'm glad you didn't use that word empowerment, because it gets like really overused, but that is what we're talking about.
Yeah, some woman said to a friend of mine, I'll come to a meeting as long as you don't try to empower me, because it turns into a fad and a buzzword. Yeah. What we're talking about doing is building a society, mm-hmm. you know. And people come to, you know, politicians come into neighborhoods, I'm going to bring jobs in. Well, I don't want a job. I want to live in an empowered society, and I want to have a meaningful, right livelihood. That may be a job. It may be something else. If that means that I'm going to be slinging hamburgers at McDonald's, then you can keep it. Because that politician wouldn't be caught dead slinging hamburgers at McDonald's, okay? And so our challenge is, I mean, our real challenge is, how do we create that society? How do we envision that society? And like you were saying earlier, if the vision of your society is that we dig up the asphalt and we plant gardens in the middle of the city, then we should start doing that. And we should start talking to other people that that's my vision of the society. Then have somebody else say, no, you're crazy. What's going to be, we're going to all have flying cars, or we're going to have such and such. But if we're not talking about the nature of the society we live in, then people who are envisioning the society, people on Madison Avenue, people on Wall Street, will create the society in their vision, and then we will be reacting to it. This reminds me of a story that happened in Czechoslovakia, and this is some years before the Velvet Revolution there. And Václav Havel, at the time the playwright dissident, was in prison. His job was to push the laundry carts around, and he saw another prisoner there, and he hadn't seen this person, another political prisoner. And he was pushing a laundry cart. So he stopped and talked for 10 minutes in the prison. And in this 10 minutes, they could have talked about how bad the prison food was, how mean the guards are, and all of this stuff. But instead, they spent 10 minutes talking about the nature of the society they were going to create. Okay? What would that society look like? Well, 2 years later, Havel is the president, and the other guy pushing his laundry cart in the prison is the foreign secretary.
Wow.
And so who are our presidents or prime ministers or foreign secretaries or governors or mayors or whatever? Who are the people who really are holding the vision of our community? Who are the people who have not and just an analysis of the problem, but a spark or a vision of the solution? And when we find those people, not just rhetoric, but when we find those people and they have concrete solutions that lead us toward a real society, we should be supporting them.
Sounds good. Well, Sharif Abdullah, can you say where we started out? Do you want to say something just real quick? It has to be really quick about the Internet and building this kind of positive society.
Well, one of the things about the Internet, if people want to find out more about what Commonway is doing, the URL is www.commonway.org. try to put as much up there as possible in terms of giving you some glimpses of what the work is of the Common Society. And there's also another website for the Common Society Movement, which is www.commonsocietymovement.org.
So what about, what are you going to talk about tomorrow? I'm sure it's going to be beyond having a website.
Yes. Well, the panel that I'm on is on virtual and real communities. People can live their entire lives on the Internet, you know, and they think that they're in community if they're on the Internet and they're talking in a chat room. That is not community. That's an interesting way of having of being in communication with someone, a very interesting way. But it can't substitute for community, for the what we're doing with our face-to-face, voice-to-voice, heart-to-heart connection. And so we'll be talking about that, about what's it like to be in a real community, and how can the Internet support real community but not try to replace it, not try to replace our notions of what community means, our notions of what it means to be a family, our notions about where, you know, what our work is into the future.
Well, that sounds good. And I guess on your website, and not everybody can go to the Internet, but you must have examples of how what's already happening in terms of creating these kinds of networks and communities and open society, positive solutions.
Well, we're working on it. And like I said, all of this is an experiment for us. No one of us knows how to create a new society because very few of us have actually done it. We all get to make this up as we go along. And we can become the people that our children and our grandchildren study in school. We can be the people who either say, oh, they were the ones that turned around the society, or they'll say, those were the ones that were asleep at the switch when they had the opportunity to turn around the entire society. They were too busy listening to the sound of their own voices to be engaged in that. And so history will be the ones that judge our actions.
So get active. Okay, thank you so much, Sharif Abdullah. And your latest book is The Power of One. And there's this other book here, Creating a World That Works for All. And the website is commonway.org. And my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening. To order a copy of the program you just heard, write down the following information. The email is sue@suesupriano.com. That's Sue, S-U-E, at Sue Supriano, SUESUPRIANO.com. Or the telephone is 510-883-1979. That's 510-883-1979.